Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Today, I'm mentoring Stephen Adams. He's a positive and innovative problem solver who has participated in many aspects within the beauty industries for the last 25 years. He founded his business in 1999. Throughout the years, he's been inspired deeply by the cultures of his surroundings. Art, humor, clothing styles kindle his imagination and helps him see the world in a different aspect of texture, density, color, and movement. Stephen feels that through his working with hair, a three-dimensional, fluid object that he sculpts and intensifies with color, he's able to create that perfect balance of both art and science. Stephen has and remains in all aspects of this industry, including salon owner, educator, and artistic leader at Moxie Hair Salon. Stephen founded Moxie Hair Salon, like I said before, in Minneapolis in 1999. He opened a second location in St. Paul off of Grand Avenue in 2005. These salons have developed a reputation as one of the most popular high-end salons in the Twin Cities. In 2012, he started a distribution center of tools for hairdressers. And in 2014, he joined and co-formed the BCA Association, a not-for-profit education association for beauty industry in the state of Minnesota. His commitment to education, community, and industry is what pushes him to the best of his abilities. His growing national reputation stems from his work as a platform artist for companies such as Aveda, John Paul Mitchell Systems, and Arojo. Arojo. Okay, let me try that again. Arojo. All right. I appreciate also your risk-taking. So just to be totally full disclosure, Stephen is my hairdresser. He's been styling my hair for the last 3 years, and I just totally love every time I come into the salon. And thanks for being here, Stephen.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's awesome.
Great. And
your hair looks awesome today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Maybe we'll have to get a picture of me later.
There we go. We should.
All right. So today he has a special event going on with your Social Sunday. And yep. You've been doing this event for 3 years?
So yeah, about 3 years, yeah.
And you do it twice a year?
We try to do it twice a year.
So can you explain a little bit more of what that is?
Yeah. What we have going on today is really exciting, is how I look at it. It's what we call Moxie Vision. And what Moxie Vision is it's a twofold project is how I look at it.
Okay.
There's a side of it that I utilize as a tool, but it's also something that gives the staff and the team a creative outlet. So most hairdressers, they get into the hair world for two reasons, and they get into it for to make people feel good, but the other part of it is to be artistic and creative and to like do cool things. And so we give them, because as a hairdresser, we don't always get to do all the really cool things.
Sure.
Because not very many people want to have like a blue bob that's shaved underneath with red triangles or something. You know, it's like,
right.
So they want to be able to do that kind of stuff. So we want to give them a platform to do it. So Moxie Vision gives them that ability. And what it is a competition between all of our staff members to work as a team, create a concept, create an overall look between a couple of different models, and at the same time push their limits on a creative level. And so they get to do whatever they want within guidelines. This year we have a couple of guidelines. One guideline is haircuts need to look kind of Sassoonish, whatever that means.
Okay.
They know what that means.
Okay.
What it means is like following kind of some of the looks that Vidal Sassoon put out mostly in the 60s and the 70s. But it could be anything. So really, it's just kind of like really very loose. So it's very creative and gets them thinking. Color this year needs to be bold and strong, but only using our color tools that we have here.
cool.
So it gives them a limit. And then the style, and the third piece of it is a style where they have to do some kind of glamorous evening wear style, like for a wedding or for like prom or some kind of event or some kind of style. But it has to incorporate braids. Somehow has to. So it always has to have some kind of focus. So that way they have a little direction, but they can take it to whatever limit they want. So this gives them an artistic ability. Now, for me, what it does, it's a really cool thing because it gives me on the business side and me as an artistic leader side, I get to see a couple of things. It engages them in teamwork because they're split into teams that they don't normally work with. Nice. It's just like it's a random draw of the hat team of three people. And then they have to work in those teams, collaborate together, and then on the day of today, MoxieVision, they have to like do all the work and all the planning hopefully is all done and everything's organized. So all they have to do is hair. And then they have a deadline. So at 5 o'clock, boom, that's our deadline. Everyone's done. Whether they're done or not.
Okay.
So it's about working as a team, and it's engaging how they're going to communicate together, what they're going to work on together. And it's each of them have a specific – the teams are consisted of three people. So it's like one person's in charge of the haircut, one person's in charge of the color, one person's in charge of the style.
Wow.
So that way they all get individual.
Yes.
Individual
exposure
and like praise and hoo-ha.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they also have a team prize, and there's a team competition. And then what we do is we bring in like really cool other salon owners. So I have four other salon owners coming in, a couple of sales reps, and a few other randoms coming in to judge.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'll want to be a judge.
Sure.
Okay. You know, because we get a crossbreed. So it's like hair people, business people, and also just normal, not hair people, because everyone's going to have a different opinion.
Sure.
And what we do is we tally up the scores, and whoever has the highest score wins, and they win really cool prizes.
Very good. Is one of the prizes going to New York?
Yes. Actually, four of the prizes are. So,
first
place for all of the first place for cut, color, and style. Each individual will get a class at the Arojo Academy in New York.
Wow.
And so they'll have to get their own way there, but we'll give them $1,000 class. And so they get to spend I think it's like 3 days in one of the classes.
That's really a nice
and then
gift. Yeah.
Yeah. And then whoever prize. Wins the grand prize, all three of them will get all paid expense. So the first place team, the whole team, all three of them will get all paid expense trip to New York for our expo next year, which is pretty huge. It's like,
yeah, it's a great way to improve your skills.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about whoever wins is going to get education. It's all about, again, going back to the team and getting education investment.
Could you tell us a little bit, go back to the beginnings of how you kind of evolved into this? Like, how did you know that you were going to style hair, and how did you know you would open up a salon?
I did not know I ever wanted to do hair, and I did not know that I ever wanted to open a salon. How does that sound?
Oh, wow.
At all. It was not like my lifetime dream.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a mad scientist. And then when I got to about 10, I wanted to be a business owner.
Oh.
And so,
well, that stuck.
Somehow it all evolved into now owning salons and other stuff. But it really kind of came into play. It just was a happy accident is really what it was. Hmm. I just fell into a job. I worked in a coffee shop, and this guy would always come in every day. And the customer service that I gave him made him stop one day. And he was like, points his finger at me, and he's like, "You." I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "I need you to work for me."
Wow.
And I looked at him, and I'm like, "How much you gonna pay me?" That's a really important question.
Bottom line,
let's go right here. Yeah, how much are you going to pay me?
Let's talk about the money.
And he's like, well, I'll pay you more. And I was like, more than you're making here. And I'm like, all right, what do you do? And he's like, I want a hair salon. I just laughed. Because I'm like, I've never even been in a hair salon at this point in my life.
Wow.
I didn't go to a barber shop. I mean, I grew up in the 70s. My mom cut my hair. I look like Leif Garrett most of the time. 80s in college, we just shaved one side. It was punk rock era, so we just did whatever. It didn't really matter.
Sure.
And I think when he grabbed me, I think my hair was like probably down the middle of my back in a long ponytail. Because it was like the good late 80s, you know, hippie days.
Sure.
And so I didn't know what I was going to do in a hair salon. But he was going to pay me more, so I figured I'd go check it out.
Wow. And that was the beginning.
That was the beginning of hair.
And you just kind of fell in love with it? Or?
Yeah. What happened was I kind of like... he basically ended up hiring me to work the front desk is where it started and be kind of like the concierge of the business to like get to know all of the customers. He had a salon about 20 chairs, about 20 stylists, 20 chairs salon. It was a pretty busy salon in Milwaukee. And he really just like had me work the front desk and really get to know the customers, which helped me like understand the business side of it and how the business side of hair worked, and that really excited me. So then he got me more involved with some of the business aspects of it. But then I was watching everybody cut hair, and I was watching how they made so much money. And then I was like, dude, I can cut hair. <That's>, like, it's easy. I totally can do it. And so he helped me get into an apprentice program and kind of like helped me, started teaching me a little bit of stuff, but I wanted to go faster. So then he helped me get into beauty school. And I went to beauty school and ran and managed the front desk of the salon the whole time. And just, there we go. That's how I got into hair.
Well, that's great. It's like all entrepreneurs are able to kind of capitalize on opportunities that they see coming their way. And you did it in a very surprising way. And you shaped it. Seemed to me always to be very innovative and creative in your thinking. And how did you eventually then totally like love what you were doing?
I love everything I do all the time. I think that's like the key to it.
Okay.
Even if I've worked in a factory before and I've worked in warehouses before and I loved every minute of it. Which might surprise people. Because they're like, what? You got to love what you do.
Yeah.
And so what I've always made it a game.
Whatever you do, you mean?
Whatever I do. Okay. Whatever I do, it doesn't matter whether it's hair or when I worked in, like, I worked a job where I was cleaning vending machines, microwaves, and coffee brewers and repairing them.
Oh.
Now, how do you love that? It's like, well... You make a game so that you're like, hey, I can put this brewer together faster than that guy. And you like make it into a game.
Little contests.
You always make it into little contests or make little games and just try to do it better. I think that's the one thing that for me, what makes me love any job or all jobs or like the job that I have is always trying to make things better and improve it and just be proud of what I'm doing.
Yeah. So as you were going along in the hair salon and this guy was teaching you and you went to beauty school and then you, when did you get the idea to open a salon? Because you first got the idea when you were 10, like, gee, I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
And so then it took a while to realize that. But so that must have stuck with you.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it constantly stuck with me. So, I mean, always owning businesses has always stuck with me. When I was 10, I decided to like... start my first business. I made like these little wood notepads and I would go door to door and sell them.
Oh, cool. No, not so much.
I didn't do so well. And then when I was in high school, I got two of my friends together and we like made up business cards called Odd Jobs Unlimited. Mm. And we went around and passed those out and we like raked people's yards and babysat and cleaned windows and cleaned gutters and whatever people wanted to hire us to do, odd jobs. And so my spirit has always been whatever I do, oh, okay, I can see how this is. So like in the salon, I watch how it runs and I'm like, I love working this. I'm going to keep collecting information, keep learning how the business works, how the industry works. Eventually I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah. Okay.
When I moved up here to Minneapolis and
from
Milwaukee,
okay.
When was it? 1991. And I came here to work for Horst Salons, which is now Jute. And I sat down with the president at the time, who was David Wagner, who's now the owner of Jute. And I sat down with him and he was like, what are your goals for the next 5 years? So I wrote them all down. I'm like, here's all my goals. And I put them all down on a sheet. One of them was open a salon in 5 years.
Oh.
So
and
it's
you
like,
were what age at that point?
I don't even know.
Okay.
let me think about that.
Okay, well, 16 years ago.
So, yeah, it was a while ago. It was like 20-some years ago. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a while ago. I must have been like 27, 28.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to open a salon in 5 years. And so I worked there, and it was interesting. When I finally left and I decided, I sat down with David, and I was just like, it's time for me to go. And I wasn't happy anymore.
Yeah.
And that wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
I knew it was mine because I wasn't following my dream.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I have to go.
Yeah.
And it was time for me to figure out what my dream was. And so, but it was interesting when I sat down and he pulled out that sheet, 9 years later, and he's like, had a little check marks by all. He's like, you reached all your goals except for opening your salon. So I kind of figured it was coming sooner or later. And I'm like, you're right. Well,
yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah. It sounds awesome. So how did you pull together the money to start?
I did probably the stupidest thing in the world.
Perfect.
I didn't pay my taxes.
Okay.
I'm being really serious.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't pay my taxes. I left Horst and I rented a chair, became an independent contractor in a salon. And so I was in charge of paying my own quarterly taxes and taxes.
Sure.
And I didn't pay some
until
the next year. So I had to pay it on a payment plan the next year. But I was just kind of like, I just saved money until I had some money to put into as a down payment. And then I pulled in my business partner, John, and who is a really good friend of mine who I noticed was really good with money.
Okay.
I obviously wasn't because I'm not paying my taxes.
Yeah, the cash flow strategy to not pay your taxes is not the greatest,
it's not
but
a good,
it worked.
It's not
at
a
the time.
Good way to start a business. I've learned a few things in life. This one I hadn't learned yet. So
yeah,
that's kind of where it started. So then I sat down with John and I was just like, I need you to invest and I need you to be my business partner. And he thought he was just going to get rich quick scheme, like, here, I'll give you $10,000 and you're going to, I'm never going to have to work again in my life. it doesn't quite work that way, but
yes, he's still here.
He's still here and he works every day, probably more than he did back then.
Yeah. Well, you've got two salons to manage, so that's a lot of work. Yeah.
So, that's how we got it started. It was just really, we put together basically about $20,000 between the two of us.
Okay.
And that gave us a good down payment. And then we set up, worked with a banker who then gave us a small business loan.
Nice.
And we worked with the Small Business Association and stuff and really got it all set together. And just do all the hard work of quickly learning how to put together a business plan.
Yeah.
And like really putting together, figuring out how to write out what your vision of your business is going to be. That was the hardest part.
Yeah, right. I see that all the time with people. Yeah, it takes the longest to kind of figure out in words exactly what you're doing.
Exactly.
And most entrepreneurs don't want to like...
We didn't even think about that.
Right.
We're already thinking about something else.
Yeah, right.
We just want to like, for me, I like to create. So it's just like new idea. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Next.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So, when did you envision that you wanted to start the second salon?
That kind of came out of, what's the right word for it? Two things. Came out of need and ego.
Okay.
And need because our first location was getting pretty full. It was pretty small. It was a small location. We had almost 10 stylists in there. We had 5 chairs, 10 stylists. We were open 7 days a week. It was for how small and boutique-y it was. It was really getting very busy.
Are you still in that same location or did you?
We are in the same location, but okay. It was half the size.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It was half the size. So it was probably 1500 square feet. Maybe.
Okay.
On a good day. And so we went from there. And so it was either we were going to grow and start a new location or just keep it where it's at. And this is where ego comes in because okay. I'm like, yeah, more, go. That's just my brain thinks that way.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, let's just do it. So we went to open a second location and found out that was a lot more difficult than I thought.
Okay. In what ways?
Biggest lesson that I learned really quickly was everything has to be systemized. Just opening a second location, if you want it to run as the same as the first business,
oh, I see.
It has to be systemized.
Yes.
And everything needs to be like clearly written out and documented. Of course, these are things I loved not to do. It's like I don't like to sit and type, but I found that I have to.
Yeah.
So I've had to change like instead of just being a creator to like, okay, now I have to be a creator and a wordsmith and kind of put it on paper. And it was kind of a learning process of just like mostly by trial and error because you're like, oh, wait, that doesn't work. Okay, they don't understand. You'd think that people would just get it. We always assume that people know what they're supposed to do, but they don't know what they're supposed to do until you give them clear, defined direction.
Yes.
And so even though we had one, we let our ego get in the way when we had two, and it took us a little bit. It was a lot. It was a hard first couple years.
Okay, so kind of the school of humility.
School of hard knocks. It was just like poor rocks being thrown at us, or whatever it is. But
yeah, okay. And how have you been managing the cash flow? There must have been like some really tight months and
constantly. I mean. Always.
Still fluctuating.
It's always a fluctuation. One time one salon does really good. The next time the other salon does really good. Then something happens in the other one. So it's constantly up and down. So what we do on the business side of it is we separate each business is set up in its own kind of like, what do you call it?
Unit,
yeah. So we keep track. It has its own banking. So what's nice about it, it's one, if it's doing well, can loan money to the other.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. So it goes back and forth. So it's like, that's one thing I did learn. Having multiple locations helps with cash flow. For these certain, when you have low periods, you can have a little buffer.
Yes.
So it's a good thing. And so
it's another resource for cash.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To manage your cash flow and keep things a little running more smoothly.
But it took a little bit to get that cash flow, you know, especially in the second one.
Right.
Because, I mean, we thought we were so cool because our salon was so busy in Minneapolis. So then when we opened up in St. Paul,
it was like starting over again.
Completely starting over. We're only 7 miles apart, but it was like nobody even knew what Moxie was. Nobody knew who Stephen Adams was. You know, it was like.
Okay.
All of a sudden, we had to start completely.
So you
over.
Thought you had a brand.
We thought we had a brand, but we didn't.
You had a local brand.
Exactly.
But now it's Twin City brand.
Now it's a Twin City brand. Exactly.
Okay. All right. We met. what I have found in teaching entrepreneurship and also just being out in the community and starting new things, like when my husband and I, we took over a chess club at Robbinsdale Spanish Immersion School. And we had the school itself had moved to a new location, and the principal wasn't totally jazzed about having a chess club there because they were having some space issues. And so anyways, we had the parents come together, and they saved the chess club. And so we grew up from 45 students to and transitioned the leadership over in 3 years, but it's over 180 kids. And I just, you know, as you grow something, and I'm just using that as kind of a model because it grew really quickly. And it was fun to have cash to like do things, and we could get coaches and really have these cool T-shirts that look like a sports school or a sports event jersey. And but we ran into the problems within the school of, getting classrooms. You would think it would be easy to get the classrooms, but we had to develop a relationship with the teachers and make sure they were comfortable with it. And every time we turned around, there were other roadblocks that kind of surfaced as we needed more space. And this is kind of an ongoing theme that I've noticed with entrepreneurs when they start a business and it starts doing well. There's always roadblocks that surface that blindside an entrepreneur because you can't predict all the things that, you know, you'd spend your whole time, you know, innovating in an area of that's no fun to innovate in, which is breaking rules.
Rules. It's way more fun breaking rules.
Yes, right. But we would have to investigate all the rules and everything before we, you know, took any step to innovate.
Exactly.
So I would like to share with our listeners to help them understand what innovation is and why the entrepreneur is the horse and innovation is the cart, and that funding needs to really go to really support the entrepreneur and its team. And right now our society is kind of designed to set up for innovation, although they don't understand that that means making a lot of mistakes along the way to try to figure out things, to make things work. Like you described yourself in your younger years as like a mad scientist. Well, I see that you have that mad scientist perspective because you're always trying different things out, even with the colors and how you're teaching, and you know, you've got your academy, and so you're always tinkering with things and changing them and making it, you know, inviting and exciting for you and for other people to be engaged with you in helping realize goals. So as you're going along and you've got this great creative genius, you figured innovation is kind of the way you implement to generate income and support your livelihood. What do you see is kind of, let's not even look at you for a minute. Let's look at when in your academy, you've got students coming up that you're training, they're hairstylists, they've been through some hairstyle training before. And so they're kind of mastering their trade. What do you look for in a stylist when they look like they're somebody who's going to start their own salon? And how does that relate to innovation?
Interesting question. You're going to challenge me today. Let's see.
Teaching and learning.
I know. This is all good.
Gotta come out somewhere.
You know, it's a really interesting thing because we do have, you know, it's like I would say about 50% of our staff sometimes want to do their own thing. Or in the beginning, they're like, yeah, I want to be my own business. And then there's the other half. They're like, ooh, I would never want to do that.
Yeah.
And so I kind of look at them the same way, what I really have tried to do is the people that want to open their own business, I try to get them a little bit more into the creative, like the creative business side of it, meaning like, let's get you into education. Let's get you into so that you're teaching.
Yeah.
Because I find that me as a mentor, my job is to be able to discover their entrepreneurship or their whatever their direction that they want to go and kind of help guide them to it. Even if it's okay for them to leave and get them to understand that down the road, it's okay if they're going to leave. I don't love it.
Yeah.
Because it's not what I really want.
Right.
But at the same time, if that's what they really want, I got to let them go. I mean, we've had six past employees already open salons. And they're all very successful salons.
Awesome.
And it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could get them to take leadership roles here more and not run off and do it, and then let them create the innovation to inspire the rest of the team.
Yeah.
So I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I'm still working on it. That's like my ongoing project is like, how do you take that entrepreneurial spirit
yeah.
and keep them so that they become
entrepreneurial?
You know, entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because so they utilize your resources. The difference between an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur is an entrepreneur is a little more independent,
yep.
wants to do their own thing. An intrapreneur has the problem-solving abilities, I mean, big problem yeah. solver, but doesn't want to risk their financial resources to do it.
Right.
So what they do, and they're also more of a team player because they're willing to work with the bureaucracy that comes up in kind of implementing something. And so they have this team spirit, and they have this desire to really connect with within the company and really advance the company.
Right.
So I think what you want to look at is who are the people that are the salon people who, like Trixie, she is really entrepreneurial.
Yes.
She likes using your resources. She doesn't imagine herself going out and in her own venture, but she's an excellent educator. She's very creative. Mm-hmm. She understands your ideas and yes. can brainstorm with you.
Yeah.
She also has really seems like good relationships with every, you know, the other stylists.
Yeah.
And they respect her a lot.
Yep. And that's kind of what we're trying to do is trying to get that type of person.
Yeah.
And like connect with them so that they can help pull the team together.
So part of what you could be looking for is an entrepreneur just sees their vision and sees themselves using their resources and developing their own identity.
Right.
Okay. So you want to nurture them and help them get their own salons. The other person they need to be able to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
Not just cut hair, like not
oh, exactly.
not just see themselves as renting a chair or being part of your
no, they
team.
They gotta be bigger. Yeah.
Yeah, that they have ideas and that when you talk with them, when you talk about big picture ideas, they can see it, they can get it, and they want to help you advance
right.
in that direction.
Yeah.
So those you can initiate some of those characteristics. To come out through conversation, which is what you do really well.
Well, thank you.
And
try.
You really connect with people in a really meaningful way.
Well, thank you. Sure. I try. I don't know.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to add in this area?
I'm trying to think.
Of innovation? When I think of innovation, I think of ways in which a direction that you want to go mm-hmm. that is not available right now.
Right. Like, okay. Right. And I kind of see that. So innovation, I feel like the entrepreneur is like the person who can create stuff. That's how I always look at it. It's like the imagination. Actually, Trixie, we were just talking about this the other day, and she's like, how do you just see things like that? Because we were just talking about like a building and I was just like, look at this building. What can you imagine just how this, this, and this, and this? And she's like, I can see it now, but I never saw that before. Huh. She was like, how do you see that? I'm like, I don't know. I just see things.
it's the way your mind works.
It's just the way my mind works. And I'm like, now that I've given you this vision, she's like, well, now I can see how we can make it happen.
Oh, Awesome.
So it's an interesting thing because I think that's the combination is entrepreneurship has to be able to create the idea and find a way to like pull it together. And then innovation is the creation of it and actually making it work.
Yes.
And put it into play. And I think that's like something that it's really hard. I feel like personally I can get things started.
Yeah.
But I don't want to keep managing it.
No.
I just want to create it, get it started, and then run onto something else.
Yeah. And that, yeah, that's a whole separate conversation. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I think that would be a fun topic to do at another time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I feel like we're finishing up our interview. It's not an interview, it's our mentoring session. And I
learned a lot.
Oh, good. Well, great.
I did.
And you've really inspired the learners at the same time. And that's what we're out to do. I really want to give like the inside scoop of what's really going on with entrepreneurship and how businesses are run. And the other person that I'd like to interview with you, we had talked about this, is your business manager. And that's in the section for our listeners under becoming a competent business owner. We entrepreneurs can't possibly have all the skills that it takes to really run a business well. We become aware of that pretty early on when we start something. But a lot of that's why our family and friends kind of we circle them in and we have them volunteer to help us out. Mm-hmm. And then if something starts taking off, then we figure out ways to, you know, pay them and kind of start supporting the venture. And so I would like to just continue learning and growing along with business owners and really give them an avenue to and a voice in a way that I don't see is in our society right now.
Awesome. Well, you're doing a great thing, so.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Well, for our listeners, thanks. You've been listening to Stephen Adams and myself and Mike Cabea, our sound engineer. I want to thank him for helping us out today. And we will continue our conversation with Stephen at another time. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome.
You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.